from that object. So, for glass, you would want it not to break. For wood, you don't want it to burn. For iron, you want strength. For a map, you want to find a location. And for a precious metal or gem, you want more.
More?
Yes, more of the same. That's why those are very rare. Gold magic has died out, for instance.
And silver? He frowned.
I believe that has died out, too.
What about art, like paintings? What does their spell do?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
He pushed his spectacles up his nose.
The problem with the spells is that their magic doesn't last forever. It fades. The length of time the magic lasts is dependent on the strength of the magician. It can last mere hours if made by a weak magician, or as long as decades. I've come across some magical objects where the magic is still in it centuries later. Many classical buildings from antiquity have survived for this very reason. They used stonemason magicians.
He put up a finger to emphasize his next point, although it required little emphasis. His bright-eyed expression was compelling enough.
India knows a spell that can extend magic. Not just her magic mind, but magic put into an object by other magicians.
I could see how that would be related to her watchmaking magic. Both spells were related to time. Is that why she's considered so important to the modern history of magic?
Not really, no. She rarely uses that spell. She's remarkable for a number of reasons, all of which stem back to her lineage. In her family tree, several magical lineages converge, and through the wonder of genetics, she has inherited great power. For one thing, she doesn't need to speak a spell. She can just think it. But most rare of all, she can create new spells.
That does sound useful. He gave me a grim smile, and I suspected there was a story behind her spell creation.
She doesn't use her magic much anymore. She decided some time ago that the possibilities are too dangerous if new spells fell into the wrong hands. Her greatest achievement is her advocacy for magicians, both in this country and around the world.
I knew they were persecuted as witches in the Middle Ages, and then more recently the craft guilds wouldn't give magicians licenses to trade, but I hadn't been aware of Lady Rycroft's role in ending that persecution.
India championed magicians,
Professor Nash added.
The guilds finally agreed to allow them to live openly and to trade freely as long as their goods were sold as luxury items, which incur a luxury goods tax. It was the only way to create harmony between the artless and magicians. It was quite nasty there for some time. Quite nasty, indeed.
Mr. Glass says you're not a magician.
That's correct. I'm descended from iron magicians, but I didn't inherit it.
I studied the objects he'd pointed out as being magician-made. The glass and mirror were just plain panes, but the turned wooden legs of the desk and table were intricate, as was the plaster ceiling. I've learned something today. I thought a magician's power lay only in making objects they manufacture more beautiful.
It's part of their power, but a spell isn't required to make a beautiful thing. A magician's products are naturally more appealing than those made by an artless craftsman. It's why a magician who doesn't know they are a magician is capable of making something of great beauty and wonder. It's an innate talent all magicians possess. Spells do something else, something more.
A magician can have a talent for their craft without realizing it?
Oh, yes. It's not until the carpenter magician whittles his first stick that he finds he has an affinity for woodwork. You asked about an artist's spell before, and I answered that I wasn't sure what their spell would do. The mere fact a piece of art has been painted by a magician already makes it more appealing than one painted by a regular artist. So I can't think how adding a spell would enhance its beauty. Make the colours more vibrant, perhaps? Make it more lifelike?
He shrugged. I touched the silver ring on my finger. It was plain, with no engraving. I didn't want to put a sharp tool to it to try my hand at silversmithing in case I destroyed the ring. I felt no particular affinity for it either, but perhaps my brother had. Perhaps that was why he suspected he was a silver magician.
There's one final part to my tour.
Professor Nash indicated I should follow him with a crook of his finger. We headed down the aisle between two shelving stacks to the end. The wall was occupied by more shelves neatly packed with books. Professor Nash pointed to one covered in red leather on the middle shelf. It didn't look old, but the top of the spine was a little worn. What an odd place for wear and tear to appear first. I tilted my head to read the black lettering on the spine, but didn't get the opportunity. Professor Nash pulled the book off the shelf, but only halfway. Something behind the book clicked. With a secret little smile, he pushed on the bookshelves. A section gave way and swung open. I drew in a sharp breath. Now you're just teasing me. A hidden passage inside a library? Have you been reading my childhood diary and discovered all my favorite things? He chuckled.
I can tell that you and I will get along famously.
He reached in and switched on a light. Beyond was an empty room the size of a cupboard with another door at the back.
This is the vestibule. That door there leads to my rooms.
You mean you live in here? He nodded.
Go in, take a look.
Are you sure? He smiled.
Quite sure.
I passed through the vestibule and pushed open the other door, revealing a small flat beyond. In some ways, it reminded me of Daisy's flat with a mezzanine level for the bedroom, although Professor Nash accessed it via a spiral staircase rather than a ladder. It wasn't as light as hers, but it wasn't dark either. High windows let in enough light for us to see. It was smaller than her flat, but it looked comfortable, if somewhat masculine, furnished much the same as the reading nooks in the library.
You may use the kitchen or bathroom facilities up here whenever you need to,
Professor Nash said. But this is your home.
Never mind that. I'm a neat person.
He pointed to a trap door in the ceiling of the mezzanine bedroom.
There's an attic full of books and other documents that require cataloging in there. Once you've settled in, you can get started on them.
We returned downstairs, and he went through some policies and procedures. The library was open to anyone. It didn't operate on a membership basis like most libraries. None of the books could be checked out, however. Anyone was welcome to stay and read in one of the nooks, but everything belonging to the library had to stay in the library.
As much as we want to keep the collection free for anyone, it does present a problem when it comes to borrowing, he told me. We can't rely on borrowers to be honest about their address, and not everyone carries identification with them. We found that out the hard way many years ago when some people simply never returned the books. I spent a lot of time finding them, so I don't want them to go missing. We changed our policy after that.
I look forward to hearing about your adventures, I said.
I'm afraid I'm not the greatest storyteller. My traveling companion was better.
Oscar, was it?
He could tell a fine tale. He was a journalist, like you. He gave it up to travel with me almost 30 years ago. Speaking of Oscar.
He scanned the bookshelves behind the desk and plucked out a book with a bright orange cover.
This is a copy of his first book.
He handed it to me.
It'll give you a good introduction to magic.
The title read, The Book of Magic. The Facts, Myths, Histories, and Rites of Sorcery in England and Around the World as Written by a Modern Magician. The author's name was Oscar Barrett. What type of magician was he?
Ink, a rather pointless magic, as he put it, but he could make it float prettily in the air.
Thank you. I'll start tonight. We continued to work throughout the morning as Professor Nash showed me what jobs he would require me to do. There weren't many. The library was set up to run efficiently and without members or borrowers. An entire component of librarianship was eliminated. I was in the middle of reshelving some books on the first floor when I turned around and got the fright of my life. Mr. Glass stood at the end of the aisle, one broad shoulder leaning against the bookshelf, his arms and ankles crossed. The pose was relaxed, but his gaze was sharp and filled with amusement. The man had a habit of finding my embarrassing moments funny.
Sorry, he said. I thought you would hear my footsteps.
I was lost in thought. I shelved the final book and walked towards him. He stepped aside, but didn't move away altogether.
Ready for lunch?
I had to turn side on and edge past him. Even so, I still brushed up against him. He didn't seem fazed, but my face heated. That only made him smile again. I quickly put some distance between us and turned away, tucking a strand of hair behind my ear. I'll check with Professor Nash first. Professor Nash was quite all right with me taking lunch. I suggested an hour, but he said to take as long as I needed. I got the impression Mr. Glass had already checked with him before coming upstairs to find me. I wasn't sure what to make of that. I supposed it depended on whether he'd used his influence to coerce the professor or not. From their friendly exchange, it was difficult to tell.
Busy morning?
Mr. Glass asked as we walked side by side along Crooked Lane. Not really. There were no patrons.
I hope you won't find it too dull.
If there's nothing to do, I can always read. Not that I'll do that, of course. I'm sure there'll be plenty of work to keep me occupied. I bit my lip. I needed to remember he was the son of the library's patron. Admitting to him that I would read while I should be working was a poor career move.
Don't worry. I won't tell Nash. I'm quite sure that's how he spends most of his day anyway.
Why did he hire me if there's not enough work for two? He simply shrugged.
What do you make of the library?
It's wonderful, I said on a breath. So many books, and the reading nooks look so cozy. Professor Nash seems nice. He's very enthusiastic about magic.
More enthusiastic than most magicians.
We walked westward, and I had a horrible feeling he was going to take me somewhere flash like the Ritz. Not even my best outfit was suitable for lunch somewhere so exclusive. We changed direction, however, and found ourselves in the streets behind Leicester Square. He stopped at a restaurant named Le Café de Paris on the corner with chairs and tables arranged out the front. He pushed open the door and I breathed a sigh of relief. I would fit in here. The patrons were dressed casually and the tables were covered with plain white tablecloths. Large mirrors made the interior look bigger than it was and the modern paintings gave it an artistic flair. Several diners sat alone, hunched over books or sketching on pads, coffee cups and ashtrays at hand. Others sat in small groups engaged in intense conversation. A friendly waiter led us to a spare table by the window. Mr. Glass ordered a bottle of red wine and asked for the menus. Thankfully, the dishes were ones I recognized and not in French. We both ordered roast beef.
It's not quite the same as a genuine French cafe, but I give the owners points for trying, Mr. Glass said.
It's probably not a wise business decision to offer frog's legs and snails to English diners.
Neither dish tastes as awful as they sound, by the way.
You've tried them?
During the war. I was in Paris for a few weeks in 18.
I thought you spent all of the war on the front lines. His eyes narrowed ever so slightly.
You've done your research.
He glanced at the man seated at the next table as he ground a cigarette butt into the ashtray. Mr. Glass's thumb began to tap on the table's surface.
As the war came to an end, I was needed in Paris.
You were an officer, weren't you?
Captain.
The tapping increased its rhythm.
Do you mind if we talk about something else?
Of course, sorry. I could kick myself. What former soldier wanted to discuss the war with a woman he hardly knew? I searched for another topic. The art in here is interesting. He studied the painting on the wall opposite.
Is that one body with two heads or two people?
Those are people. I thought it was just a collection of geometric shapes. He flashed a grin. It was utterly disarming.
It's fortunate neither of us wants a career as an art critic.
My brief stint at the Royal Academy proved that point to me, I said. Although none of the paintings in the exhibition looked anything like these.
The Academy isn't known for being at the forefront of the artistic movement. Speaking of the exhibition, tell me more about the meeting between Lady Stanhope and Ludlow.
I repeated what I told him over the phone that morning. It may mean nothing, I finished, but I thought it worth mentioning.
It's definitely suspicious.
He raised his glass to me.
Thank you for bringing it to my attention, Sylvia. May I call you Sylvia?
Yes.
Call me Gabe.
Are you sure? I blurted out.
Quite sure.
My face heated again, but I had nothing to hide behind. He didn't smile or seem to find amusement in my embarrassment this time, but I still felt like a fool. Fortunately, the waiter brought our food, drawing Gabe's attention away from me.
Which gallery were they in when you overheard their heated conversation?
Gabe asked as he cut into his beef.
The main one.
Were they near a particular piece of art?
I finished chewing as I thought back to when I'd stumbled upon them.
Do you recall the seascape with the steamship?
He'd been about to eat a morsel of beef but lowered his fork.
I do.
They were near that. We moved it the night before to a more prominent position since it was so popular. Is that a clue?
He didn't answer immediately, but continued to eat. I suspected he wouldn't answer me, citing the excuse that he wasn't allowed to talk about the case with the civilian. But he proved me wrong.
It may be important, but I'm not yet sure. There's still so much we don't know about this case.
Since he was in a talkative mood, I might as well try my luck and ask more questions.
What do you know?
This time, he didn't hesitate.
That it's likely someone at the gallery is involved in the theft.
He picked up his wine glass and sipped, watching me over the rim.
I should probably start at the beginning.
I stayed silent, not wanting to shatter his trust in me.
Scotland Yard employ me only on cases that involve magic or magicians. I was called in for this case when the owner of the stolen painting claimed it was done by a magician artist. At least, that's what the owner claimed.
You don't think it's magical?
I have no opinion one way or another. The painter is long dead, so he can't be questioned. He lived a century ago, in a less enlightened time when magicians were persecuted. Paint magicians never revealed their talent out of fear they'd be ostracized by the Royal Academy. That's the closest thing to a guild artists have. The stolen work was done by a little-known artist named Jean-Baptiste Delaroche. He wasn't very prolific. This painting is one of only three in England.
If no one knows whether the painter was a magician, why did the owner buy it?
She bought it for a low price from a dealer she claims had no idea about fine art. She suspected it was magician-made, so when she took it home, she invited a sculpture magician to verify it for her. She never got a second opinion.
Why a sculptor magician, not a painter?
She said he was an acquaintance and she trusted him. He sensed the magic in the Delaroche and gave his professional assurance to her.
Is he under suspicion for the theft?
He is on my suspect list, but I'm yet to connect him to the black market for art, which is where the painting most likely is destined.
When was it stolen?
2 days before the exhibition opened for private viewings. It was on loan from the owner for the duration of the exhibition and had just arrived at Burlington House. Sometime that afternoon or night, it disappeared. Only the frame remained.
It must have been placed behind the village painting until such time it could be squirreled out of Burlington House.
Precisely. You'd make a good detective, Sylvia.
Unfortunately, my nose will have to remain buried in books rather than other people's business since the police don't employ women.
Their loss.
We ate in silence for a few minutes as I tried to make sense of the case.
The thief has to be someone with access to Burlington House after hours.
Not necessarily. People came and went all afternoon, delivery men, the exhibition manager and his assistant, even some artists who delivered their work personally.
The packing team?
And them. In theory, any of the staff employed that day, including Ludlow.
And Lady Stanhope? I assume she was there going over last-minute details with Ludlow. He nodded.
As a friend of the painting's owner, she also knew it was magical.
You think the seascape is also magical, don't you? He finished his meal, then sat back.
It seems likely. According to the experts, it's technically perfect. To me, it's simply a beautiful piece. Other Philistines seem to agree.
I smiled. Including this Philistine. Can you have an independent magician verify it?
I didn't want to draw attention to it, but now I'm worried it's too late. The exhibition manager has moved it to a new, more prominent location, and two of my suspects were seen having a heated discussion near it.
He dipped his head in a bow.
Without you, I wouldn't have known.
Perhaps a guard can be employed to watch it. He refilled our wine glasses and picked his up.
You were there during the first private viewing. Did you notice anyone paying it particular attention?
I wasn't employed to notice anything except the hors d'oeuvres on my tray, as Mr. Ludlow delighted in reminding me before he fired me. One side of his mouth kicked up in a small smile.
I doubt that stopped an inquisitive person such as yourself.
I did see a few painters nearby who seemed to be discussing it. Then Lady Stanhope joined them. She was friendly towards them and they seemed to like her.
They can't afford not to like her, at least to her face. Their livelihoods depend on her patronage. She's a great art lover.
And artist lover, I suspected, going by the way she flirted with Horatio that day. What do you make of her?
I'd never met her before that day.
I thought she moved in the same circles as your parents. He chuckled.
Do you think everyone with a title are friends?
No. Of course not. He looked at me as though he knew I was lying. I cleared my throat. I think I know where we can find out more about her. At his arched brows, I added, from the way she was touching Horatio, I think they're more than mere acquaintances.
Let's ask him, shall we?
Now?
The sooner the better, before the thief tries to steal the seascape.
He paid what we owed and headed for the door. I grabbed my bag and hurried after him. But I have to return to work.
I'll have a word with Nash. I'm sure he won't mind.
He smiled as he opened the door for me. I warred with myself on the walk back to Crooked Lane. It was my first day at the library. Should I take time off, even for something as important as the case? I decided to ask Professor Nash if it was all right and change my plan if he seemed reluctant. Wait out here, I said to Gabe when we arrived at the library. I don't want you influencing his decision. Professor Nash didn't flicker an eyelash when I told him Gabe wanted me to help with his investigation. Indeed, he seemed unsurprised by the request.
The work will still be here when you return, he said cheerfully.
I'll make up any time lost by staying back late the rest of the week.
That won't be necessary. Gabe is paying your wage, so if he finds another purpose for you, then so be it. The work here will get done eventually.
I blinked slowly at him. I assumed I was being paid by the library. I know Lord and Lady Rycroft are patrons, but aren't there others? And isn't there a board or committee that oversees things like employment and wages?
No, you don't understand. Gabe is paying your wage, not his parents or the other patrons. And the committee are hopeless. They wouldn't have made the decision to employ an assistant in one day. Good Lord, no. It would have taken them weeks. Gabe informed me that your predicament was urgent and you needed to be employed immediately. He's paying your wage until such time as the committee gets around to meeting and discussing the role of assistant.
I must have had a stupid look on my face because Professor Nash leaned forward and squinted at me.
Is everything all right, Miss Ash? Did you eat an eel pie from the street seller on the corner? They're notoriously awful. No, of course you didn't. Gabe would have taken you somewhere nice.
I stared back at him, still trying to digest what he told me and what it meant. Gabe, was paying the wage of a woman he hardly knew out of his own pocket for an assistant's position that hadn't existed before today and, to be quite honest, wasn't needed. Why? And what did he expect in return? Chapter 8. You should have told me, I said to Gabe. He sheepishly dug his hands into his trouser pockets.
Ah, I see Nash spilled the beans. I hoped you wouldn't find out for a while yet, at least until you'd settled in.
Why didn't you tell me you were personally paying my wage?
Because I didn't want you to find out.
I shot him a withering glare. I probably should be more careful than ever about what I said around him. Being from a wealthy and titled family was one thing, but he also had the power to have me dismissed or to dock my wages. I ought to find it unnerving, but I was too angry to worry. My temper, which was slow to ignite, had just had a load of fuel dumped on it.
I didn't want you to find out because I was worried one of two things would happen. You'd either start treating me like an employer or you'd be angry. At least one mystery is solved today.
I'm glad you find my predicament amusing. Add it to the tally of all the other things. I stormed off along the lane. He easily caught up to me with his long strides and fell into step beside me.
I do not find you amusing. In fact, right now I find you to be the exact opposite.
He blocked the exit, forcing me to stop too.
I didn't say anything because it's only a temporary arrangement. As soon as the committee get around to ratifying your employment, your wages will be paid by the library's fund.
Which your parents pay into?
Among other people.
He stepped aside.
I felt guilty for costing you the other job, Sylvia. When I realized you needed the money, I thought you'd be perfect for the Glass Library. But I also know the committee are hopeless, so I took the matter into my own hands. I should have been honest with you. I'm sorry.
I pressed my lips together tightly in the hope it would keep my emotions in check. The flush in my cheeks was from anger this time, not embarrassment. But that anger was rapidly fading with every blink of his velvety green eyes. You pitied me, I said.
No,
I arched my brows, and he sighed.
I did it out of guilt, not pity.
What do you want from me, Gabe?
Right now, I want you to speak to Horatio.
Somehow, he managed to look like an innocent schoolboy. I blamed those eyes and the way the long dark lashes fanned them with every blink. Eyelashes like that were wasted on a man. I marched out of the lane and turned left.
My motor is this way.
He pointed right. The top was up on the Vauxhall, which was just as well since clouds were gathering. He cranked the car while I climbed into the passenger side. Once the engine began to rumble, he sat beside me. We drove without speaking until we reached Horatio's building. As soon as he turned the car off, he turned to me.
Can we go back to being friends, Sylvia?
We weren't friends to begin with.
Then let's start now.
You're my employer, Gabe. I got out and closed the car door with an emphatic slam to get my point across. In fact, I think I should call you Mr. Glass again.
Please don't.
He strode alongside me toward the building.
Sylvia, there's no need for this. I assure you, I have no ulterior motives. It's a business arrangement, nothing more.
I know that. I heard my snippy tone and loathed it. I tried hard to school my features, but it wasn't easy. Not when emotions whirled within me, tangling together until I could no longer identify each individually. I tried to shove aside the little voice in my head that told me I was overreacting, but it wouldn't be silenced. It spoke the truth. I was overreacting to the situation. Gabe admitted he did it because he felt guilty and that the arrangement would change once the committee were on board. He'd given me an assurance ours was purely a working relationship. So why was I bothered by it? Why didn't I want to be friends with this man? My reaction made no sense to me, so I couldn't blame him for his deep sigh as he headed into the building. I couldn't expect it to make sense to him either. I had expected Horatio's flat to be large, as befitting an artist who exhibited at the Royal Academy's summer exhibition. It was only about the same size as Daisy's, without the mezzanine level. A wooden screen separated the bedroom from the rest of the flat, which acted as a studio. At first glance, the painted screen looked bright and summery, with birds flying across a blue sky. But on closer inspection, the landscape they flew over was littered with blackened stumps mired in mud. Horatio's hands were clean. We hadn't interrupted him painting. He invited us to sit and looked around for uncluttered chairs.
Apologies for the mess, but I've hardly had time to blow my nose, let alone tidy up.
May we see your latest work? I asked.
Certainly not. It's not finished. You may look at those.
He flapped a hand at the paintings leaning against the wall. They were avant-garde, like the ones we saw in the cafe, not at all like the realistic painting he'd given me or the one he exhibited at the exhibition. I wondered which sold better.
Gabe told him we needed to know about Lady Stanhope for an investigation. Sylvia says she saw you two conversing at the exhibition, and we hoped you could tell us what she's like.
Horatio's eyes lit up.
Is she a suspect in a crime?
I can't answer that.
He gasped.
She is, isn't she? Why else would you be here? What has she done?
As I said, I can't answer that.
Has she finally tried to poison that dull old goat she married?
Horatio, I chided. You know Gabe can't tell you. Anyway, you ought to be careful or you'll become a suspect too. I saw the look she gave you at the exhibition. If she poisons her husband's, it would be because of you. His face paled.
Me? But I didn't encourage her. Oh,
you're joking. It's not very amusing, Sylvia.
It is to me.
Horatio crossed his arms and gave me an arch look.
We're not lovers.
I raised my brows. He sighed.
Very well. We were, but just the once. It was a few weeks ago, and it won't happen again.
Does she know that? From the way Lady Stanhope touched him at the exhibition, I suspected she wanted their arrangement to resume.
She does now.
What's she like? Gabe asked.
She doesn't like being refused. She told me she'd have me blacklisted by the Academy if I didn't go back to her. She doesn't realize that I don't care. The artwork shown by the Academy is as boring as the people who run it. They only want to show the same thing they've shown for decades. They haven't noticed that the world has changed. People want to be inspired and moved by art. They're tired of cows and cottages.
Why did you want to exhibit there if you're not interested in the Academy's opinion? I asked.
Exhibiting at the summer exhibition fulfilled a lifelong dream. But it's a dream I had years ago. That sort of art doesn't interest me like it used to. After the war, I moved on to more modern, experimental styles. I don't want to dwell in the past. Nobody our age does,
he added heavily. Gabe nodded at the wooden partition with the birds flying over the war-ravaged landscape.
The Somme? Passchendaele.
Gabe gave a grim nod.
I was there.
Horatio shook his head, as if shaking off the memories.
I'm not the only artist whose work Lady Stanhope put forward to the selection committee. If you understand my meaning.
Oh, right. Horatio had agreed to the affair to get his work exhibited. Once he'd secured his place in the exhibition, he'd ended it. Other artists had too.
She wasn't very discriminate, he went on. Freddie Duckworth would never have got a place if it weren't for Lady Stanhope. Brilliant sculpture, but, like me, his usual style isn't the sort the Academy likes. He made a piece specifically for the exhibition on the off chance it would be accepted. Surprise, surprise, it was. After his liaison with Lady Stanhope.
At the mention of the sculptor, Gabe shifted his weight. It may have meant nothing, but I wondered if it was the sculptor-magician who'd verified the stolen artwork was done by a magician.
I'm not sure what she got out of their liaison, to be honest,
Horatio went on.
Freddy's more of a gargoyle than an Adonis.
Perhaps she enjoyed his company, I said.
Your naivety does you credit, but if you saw him, you'd agree.
He clicked his fingers.
You did see him, as it happens. He was standing with us that day at the private viewing when Lady Stanhope came up to me.
When you were studying the seascape.
Which seascape?
The one everyone loved, with the steamship powering through the water.
I remember that one. A fine piece. Lady Stanhope was seen having an argument with Ludlow the butler,
Gabe said.
He seemed to be angry with her. Would you say she's the sort to allow a servant to speak sternly to her?
Horatio snorted.
Is any lady that sort?
When neither of us spoke, he added.
I imagine Ludlow is looking for other work now. She would see that he was dismissed.
He leaned forward conspiratorially.
So tell me, what is Lady Stanhope supposed to have done?
I glanced at Gabe, but he simply stood and buttoned his jacket.
Thank you for your time.
Horatio shot to his feet.
Come now, you can tell me. I've been an immense help answering all your questions. I deserve to know what you think she has done.
You weren't that much help, I said. Horatio wagged a finger at me.
I expected more from you, Sylvia. We're friends. You know I'd keep anything you told me to myself.
You tell Daisy everything.
She doesn't count.
When he could see neither of us would give in, he clicked his tongue and followed us to the door.
I thought your new job was in another library, Sylvia. Not working with the police.
I'm working at the Glass Library, but Gabe wanted me to accompany him here since you and I are friends. He smiled slyly.
I understand.
I managed to keep my features schooled, but was betrayed by my flushed face. As much as I wanted to retort that he was quite wrong, I didn't want to draw attention to myself.
No, Gabe said levelly. I don't think you do.
I expected Gabe to take me back to Crooked Lane, but instead he drove down a narrow mews in Bloomsbury and stopped at the front of a building that looked like a coach house or motoring garage. Going by the potted flowers beside the door, I suspected it was now a private residence. After many of the larger townhouses in the area were converted into flats, the accompanying mews behind them were also converted. I joined Gabe on the pavement.
Does Freddie Duckworth live here?
Yes. I met him when I wanted confirmation that the stolen Delaroche was indeed the one he verified as being magical.
Did you ask him where he was on the day it was stolen?
Thinking like a detective again, I see. I did ask, and no, he didn't have an alibi. He was at Burlington House delivering his sculpture. He had access to the painting, but so did a lot of people.
If he's guilty, how does Lady Stanhope fit in?
I don't know.
Are you going to ask him about her?
He shook his head.
Not yet. Not until I know if it's relevant. I don't want him deducing that he's one of my suspects.
He knocked on the blue door.
Today, I just want to ask him about the seascape.
While calling someone ugly was not something I would ever do, Horatio was right when he said Freddie Duckworth was no Adonis. He did himself no favors by combing his thin hair over his bald patch in an attempt to hide it, and wearing what could best be described as a large potato sack with holes cut out for his head and arms. He used the smock to wipe gray dust off his hands, but he didn't seem to be aware it was also on his face.
Come in, come in.
He ushered us inside to the sitting room with jerky movements of his bone-thin hand. There was no sign of any half-finished sculptures, so I assumed his studio was upstairs. There were several finished ones, however. None were what I'd describe as classical, like those in the exhibition. They were all faceless bodies in twisted, unnatural poses.
Tea? We can't stay long, Gabe said. We wanted to ask your professional opinion about one of the paintings in the Academy's exhibition.
Freddie's gaze slid to me. He didn't seem to recognize me from that day at the private viewing, but I remembered him as one of Horatio's friends. He wasn't as flamboyant as Horatio, but seemed no less self-assured as he offered us seats with an expansive sweep of his hand. He was small in stature, with busy fingers that tapped and drummed throughout the conversation. His face was thin too, his cheeks sunken beneath the shadow of a beard. Usually, when I saw a starving artist, I assumed they were poor, but the furniture was new and well made, the carpet plush and the grate clean. It smelled like it had been recently blackened. Like most bachelors, I doubted he kept his own house. He probably had a charwoman come in. The sitting room was also filled with statues, mostly of nude women. I kept my gaze on Freddy.
You can trust Miss Ash, Gabe assured him. She's working with me on the case.
I arched a brow, but he didn't notice.
The painting in question is a seascape with a steamship ploughing through the water. Do you remember it?
Of course. And if you want to know if it was done by a magician, then I can confirm that it was. How do you know? I asked.
I'm a magician. I can sense magic in objects.
What does sensing magic feel like? Ever since Gabe had mentioned it, I'd wanted to know.
The magic leaves behind some residual warmth which a magician can feel, but it's not like the usual heat from a fire or hot water. It's different. I can't explain it. It's something only another magician can understand.
He gave me a look which was more sympathetic than apologetic. He felt sorry for us artless, as if we were somehow lesser. Gabe thanked him and led the way to the door.
One more thing. Are you absolutely sure the stolen painting was done by a painter-magician?
Freddy started to laugh, but cut it short. His jaw worked and his lips moved, but it took 3 spluttered attempts before he ground out.
Am I certain? Am I certain? Mr. Glass, you come from a family of magicians. Of all the artless, you should be aware that a magician simply knows.
Gabe put up his hands.
Forgive me, I wasn't questioning your expertise.
You were.
Freddy strode past us and jerked open the front door.
If this is the thanks I receive for assisting the police, then kindly leave.
He might not be as flamboyant as Horatio, but he was far more dramatic. The slam door almost hit Gabe in the back as he exited behind me.
I suppose I should expect nothing less after questioning a man's professional integrity.
Do you genuinely believe he was lying about Delaroche being a magician painter? He opened the motor's passenger door for me.
We only have his say-so that the painting contains magic.
Can't another magician check the other paintings done by Delaroche?
There are very few in existence. Scotland Yard is chasing up professional opinions on all of them. Even if magicians can't sense magic in them, that doesn't mean the stolen one wasn't magical. Perhaps Delaroche put a spell on it, but not the others. Some persecuted magicians use their spells only rarely, some never did, and have gone to their graves leaving no magical items behind. The fear of being discovered was very real. In the 19th century, when Delaroche was alive, they might no longer be burned at the stake for witchcraft, but they could lose their livelihoods, their friends, and their reputations.
Gabe's mother must have faced that kind of ostracism. To have overcome that and pushed for reform was bravery indeed. Professor Nash explained to me that a magician who doesn't use a spell still produces better products than an artless craftsperson, I said.
There's usually something more compelling about them, it's true.
But when a spell is added, the product becomes superior in some way. For clocks, it's to run on time and so forth. But he wasn't sure what a spell could do for a painting.
Keep the colours vibrant for longer?
He shrugged in the same way as Professor Nash had when posing the same question. I climbed into the motor and glanced at the sky. It was growing late. I asked Gabe for the time when he slid into the driver's seat. He flipped open the lid on his silver pocket watch. Unlike most men nowadays, he didn't wear a wristwatch.
It's 4:30. I'll return you to the library.
We drove to the entrance of Crooked Lane in a silence that was less tense than earlier. My temper had cooled and, while I didn't like his subterfuge, I decided I had no choice but to accept it. I wanted to keep the job at the library, and that meant accepting that Gabe was personally paying my wage until a different arrangement could be made. It also meant I had to maintain a professional distance from him. It was for the best. I was about to tell him that when we pulled to the curb and he switched off the engine, but before I could speak, He got in first.
So, are we friends again?
He looked directly ahead as he asked it, almost as if he didn't care about the answer, or was worried what my answer might be. When I didn't speak immediately, he finally turned to look at me. He frowned.
Sylvia.
I ought to lecture him about professionalism and remind him again that we were not friends and never could be. But something stopped me. He'd gone very still, except for the drumming of his thumb on the steering wheel, and his green eyes drilled into me with an intensity that warmed my skin but also stretched my already taut nerves. I'd seen that same look in men who'd returned from the war before, but it was always fleeting, and never directed at me. It both chilled me and thrilled me, made me want to reach out and stroke away the grim set of his lips. Every part of me became aware of him, of his stare, the tapping thumb, and, most of all, his close proximity. Someone pounded on the door with their fist, breaking the spell. My already rapidly beating heart felt as though it burst out of my chest. Gabe? It was Willie, his brash American cousin. Gabe, get out right now or I'll wrench this door open and pull you out myself. Chapter 9. Willie might be a similar size to me, but I doubted anyone took her lightly. I wasn't about to. I certainly couldn't ignore her, standing outside the motor with hands on hips and a frown on her face. Gabe swore under his breath.
Sorry about her.
I don't think she likes me, I said.
She's angry with me, not you.
For ignoring the directive to stay home?
I left the house without her.
He opened the door and got out.
Willie, what are you doing here?
Something to his right caught his attention. His shoulders stooped.
You too?
Alex strode up, looking as annoyed as Willie, although somewhat less murderous.
We've been looking everywhere for you. I've been following up a lead with Sylvia.
Alex and Willie turned to me. Alex greeted me cordially, if a little stiffly. Willie crossed her arms over her chest.
Did you really need to take her with you?
Gabe's jaw firmed.
Yes. You shouldn't leave the house without one of us,
Alex snapped.
Both of us? Willie added.
If the kidnapping attempt is linked to the investigation, then continuing to investigate is the worst thing you can do. You should be taken off the case.
As Alex said it, he lifted his gaze and nodded at a man approaching.
I'll speak to my father.
Alex's father was as much of a giant as his son. Both were solid, tall men, but the elder Mr. Bailey was more thick-set compared to Alex. It wasn't his size that had me gulping as he drew closer, however. It was the black leather eye patch over one eye and the scar that leaked from the patch's lower edge to his cheek. Storybook pirate villains were less menacing. Then he ruined the effect by smiling at me. It was a smile as large as the man himself.
You must be Miss Ash, the professor's new assistant.
His American accent was as thick as Willie's, his voice as deep as his son's.
How did you know?
Alex sounded indignant.
I'm a detective.
I shook Cyclops's hand. It's a pleasure to meet you, Detective Bailey.
Just call me Cyclops. Everyone does.
Be honest. How did you find out about her?
Alex asked again.
Bristow told me about Miss Ash's visit to the house yesterday, and that Gabe offered her a job here at the library.
That old gossip,
Willie muttered with a shake of her head.
You guess Gabe would be here just from that?
Alex asked.
You don't get to be a detective inspector without having sharply honed instincts, son.
He smiled and clapped Alex on the shoulder. Alex looked skeptical about his father's explanation but didn't press him again.
I was just telling Gabe that you should take him off the case. It's not safe.
Do not take me off the case, Cyclops,
Gabe said.
I'm making progress.
Ain't you listening, Gabe?
Willie all but shouted.
The closer you get to finding the thief, the bigger the danger. Alex is right. You gotta stop. Let someone else take over now.
Gabe removed his driving cap and dragged his hand through his hair to ruffle it. If the kidnapping is linked to the case, then the next person is going to have the same problem. But I don't think it is. It doesn't make sense to kidnap me. It won't change anything. It won't stop Scotland Yard investigating. Willie exploded with a string of expletives until Cyclops ordered her to pipe down. She fell into a stroppy silence. I cleared my throat. If you'll all excuse me, I have to get back to work.
Thank you for your help, Sylvia,
Gabe said.
I appreciate it.
I didn't think I'd been of much assistance. He could have called on Horatio without me, but I didn't think mentioning that in front of the others would help his argument with them. He turned to Cyclops.
Are you returning to Scotland Yard? Sylvia and I think another painting could be the next target for the thief. Security should be tightened at Burlington House for the remainder of the exhibition.
Cyclops shook his head.
I'm heading home. You go. My sergeant will arrange it.
I'm also going to arrange for the sculptor magician to inspect the painting and confirm whether it is or isn't magician made. I'd wager it is, but I want to be sure.
Alex opened the motor's passenger door.
I'm coming with you.
He slipped inside while Gabe cranked the car. It crumbled to life. Before he climbed into the driver's side, Cyclops stopped him with a hand to his shoulder.
There's a journalist watching your house. Bristow says he's been there all day.
Gabe nodded his thanks. I headed through the covered entrance to Crooked Lane beyond, leaving behind the hubbub of the city. Or so I thought. Willie and Cyclops followed me. The problem with a dead-end street is that there's no escape. I couldn't get rid of them, so I rounded on them. Is there something else? I said in the friendliest voice I could muster. Willie stabbed a finger at my face, stopping only inches from my nose. It wasn't easy, but I remained where I stood, willing my feet not to take a step back, no matter how much I wanted to. Stay away from Gabe. He's almost back to the person he was before the war. I don't want anything or anyone to jeopardize his progress.
Willie,
Cyclops barked.
Don't be rude. And if you think Gabe's ever gonna be the same as he was before the war, think again. Besides, he was reckless and a bit of a prick in those days.
He was more fun. I liked him better.
That's because recklessness is your meat and potatoes.
He turned to me.
She's as mad as a feral cat.
The insult seemed to slide off her. I suspected these two had flung worse at one another for years and no longer took offense.
You have the wrong end of the stick.
I was about to tell them that Gabe and I were just friends, but in truth, we weren't even that.
He came to me,
was all I said. Willie opened her mouth to speak, but Cyclops grabbed her by the shoulders and steered her in the direction of the lane's exit.
Go home, Willie.
She gave him a rude hand gesture and marched off, out of the lane. Cyclops released a long breath.
Sorry about her. I'd like to say you get used to her, but you don't. Hard to believe she's been married twice.
You've known her a long time?
He smiled wistfully.
Decades. I was in my 20s when I met Willie, Matt, and Duke.
Duke?
Another friend. He moved back to America years ago, got married, and now has a horse ranch with his wife and two sons.
He spoke softly, his voice thickening with emotion. He must miss Duke.
If you'll excuse me, I should return to work, I said. I've been absent for hours.
Don't worry about Professor Nash. He's a good man. He won't fire you without good reason.
He can't anyway. Gabe employed me. He's paying my wage.
Cyclops's eye widened, then narrowed as he glanced over his shoulder in the direction of the lane exit.
It was nice meeting you, I said, and walked off toward the library.
Just a moment, Miss Ash.
Cyclops fell into step beside me.
I came to ask you about the kidnapping.
I stopped and blinked up at him. He hadn't come here in search of Gabe. He hadn't used his detecting skills to find him.
He'd come to see me, and Gabe just happened to be here. He winked. He must have followed my train of thought.
Don't tell him. It keeps them on their toes if they think I know everything.
I couldn't help smiling. He was the most surprising man. What do you want to know?
Gabe and Alex made it sound like a minor incident, but I got the impression they weren't telling me everything. You were there. Tell me what really happened.
A man tried to force Gabe into the car. There was also a driver and another man in the backseat who aimed a gun at Gabe when Gabe got the attacker in a headlock. Cyclops rubbed the back of his neck.
Damn it,
he muttered. None of us saw the face of the man with the gun. As Alex ran up, the attacker got back into the car and it drove off.
Was anything said? Any threat to give up the investigation?
I shook my head. Just the man with the gun ordering Gabe to let the thug go or he'd shoot. Did they not mention him?
They did not,
he said darkly. They didn't want you to worry.
That's probably it. Gabe's tired of folk fussing.
Why do they fuss? He leveled his gaze with mine.
He's an only child and spent 4 years of war. His parents tried not to cuss at him, but they have a lot of friends who've looked out for him over the years.
Like you and Willie. He put up his hands in surrender.
Don't put me in the same category as her. I have 4 of my own to worry about, 3 of them daughters. Willie doesn't have children. Gabe's like a son to her. She worries about him, especially now that India and Matt have gone overseas.
They mustn't be too worried about him if they left.
He's come a long way since leaving the army. They also knew he needed his own space and time.
It seemed odd to add time, but perhaps Lady Rycroft was somewhat obsessed with it, considering she was a watchmaker magician. Cyclops, was Gabe really on the front lines for the entire 4 years?
He was.
His gaze narrowed.
Why?
I shrugged. It just seems incredible that he wasn't seriously injured. His eye narrowed even further.
That's what the journalist who keeps pestering him says.
I should go. I turned and hurried to the library. It was clear Gabe wasn't the only one who disliked journalists. First Willie and Alex, now Cyclops too, all voiced a negative opinion about my former profession. If I was going to see them again, I'd be worried about accidentally revealing it. But my association with Gabe and his friends was finished. I had no reason to see them again. He might pay my wages, but he had no need to call on me anymore. I pushed open the door and breathed in the scent of leather covers and paper. It was a relief to be away from those people and immerse myself in my work after a trying afternoon. But a small voice inside me admitted that it had not been an awful afternoon. Not in the least. Daisy sat on the edge of the desk in the reading nook on the first floor of the library, one long leg crossed over the other. She placed her hands on the desk surface behind her and leaned back, closing her eyes. She looked like an artist's model, perfectly positioned where the sunlight could capture the colors of her hair, from blonde to strawberry and every shade in between.
"This library is much better than the Philosophical Society one," she said.
"You're only saying that because Professor Nash let you stay when he found you." Daisy had hidden under the desk when the professor returned after his lunch break. He must have heard her voice because it was the first place he looked when he joined me. She and I had both held our breaths as she crawled out, but he'd only smiled, pushed up his glasses, and welcomed her to the glass library. He left us to talk, even saying that he didn't want to intrude.
"It reminds me of my grandfather's library," she went on.
"Really? How large was his house?" She hopped off the desk and threw herself onto the sofa. She lounged into the corner and picked up the book on magic by Oscar Barrett that the professor had loaned me. I'd stayed up well into the night reading it and continued over my lunch break. She flipped through the pages, then put the book down again.
"Horatio told me you called on him yesterday with Gabriel Glass."
We asked him about Lady Stanhope. He knows her rather well.
There's no need to wiggle your eyebrows like that, Sylv. I know what you're implying without the facial theatrics.
I lowered the book on tribal witchcraft I'd been studying. Are you jealous? Do you like Horatio in that way?
Lord, no. I'm not jealous of him and that old crow. I'm just a little disappointed you didn't include me in all the fun.
It wasn't fun. Gabe and I were working. She twisted her mouth to one side, then the other.
Why did he need you when he has Alex?
I think he was avoiding Alex. She snorted.
I can't blame him for that. I'd do everything in my power to avoid him too. The man is rude and arrogant.
She suddenly sat up.
I've been thinking about your predicament.
What predicament? I have a job now.
Not that. About your brother's notion that you're descended from silver magicians. You've given up too easily.
I wouldn't say that. I was preoccupied with finding work. Besides, we came to a dead end when the Silversmiths Guild couldn't find any ashes in their archives. She stood and strode to the nearest bookshelf.
There must be some books about silver magicians in here.
Not specifically.
One of them must mention silver magic in some capacity.